Media shouldn't be one note. Support Rabble.ca and a diversity of voices in Canadian media. Visit rabble.ca/donate to contribute.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. The next film that we talk about is with Andreas, one of the co-directors of the film The War Show, and this is a look into what's going on in a part of the world that we continue to hear a great deal about, but it's a film that puts a real human face on what's happening currently in Syria and around. And the film is not afraid to, and the directors are not afraid to take on the real issues and to kind of situate us in a context that I don't think we've ever really seen before. And as Andreas says, the two things for him: one, we have to think less of killing, and two, we've got to stop barrel bombing. And so this is just two of the conclusions coming out of this film, but it's a great film, it's a great doc, it's an important film as well, and the music is astounding, and it will pull you in right from the get-go. So The War Show is an interview. It's coming up with one of the co-directors of the film. DavidPeckLive.com, rabble.ca for more interviews on the Toronto International Film Festival and others, so check us out online. And coming up, The War Show. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, a filmmaker who is responsible for what I would call a really important film, an important documentary that's being very well received here at the Toronto International Film Festival, Andreas Desgu.
Desgu.
Good. Close.
It's fine.
And your co-director, Obadiah Zaitoun. Excellent. Good. Always a little concerned about getting everybody's name right. So the film, The War Show, is a difficult film, to say the least, and yet deeply compelling and engaging. Music draws you in a way that almost made me feel a little bit, guilty.
Guilty? In
yeah.
What sense?
Well, maybe it's conviction. Actually, Andreas, maybe that's it. I mean, I've certainly seen a lot of doc film over the years, but bringing into this issue, this Middle Eastern Syrian issue, in a way that was very human.
Mm-hmm. Well, the music in itself is a very interesting story. It's the Canadian saxophone player called Colin Stetson, who's within music a worldwide name, and he's contributed to other films like 12 Years a Slave. And the story about our collaboration was that I visited Obeda, in her apartment between Christmas and New Year's. And she was in Denmark. And at the same time, she was in Syria. What that means is that she was in her hometown, Sabadani, through Skype. Her hometown had been under siege for 3 years at the time. In the last 6 months, it'd been cut off from any sort of food supplies. So people were basically dying of hunger. Mm. And this is a town of 45,000 people. So she could sit on Skype and follow this because right. The internet was still working. And her being in Denmark, following this pain, streaming that pain in a way, that's a term that she uses, was, of course, very tough on her. At the same time, I then came and visited her in her apartment, and she was listening to the music of Colin Stetson, who uses a very special technique called almost like circular breathing.
Okay.
And through that, he can actually produce several tones at the same time. And it's very connected to breathing. If you go online and watch his videos of him playing the saxophone, it's just, it's an immense experience. It's very powerful. So Obeda and I, we looked at each other and we just said, this has got to be the music for the film.
So not digitized. This is all...
It's everything
it's
is made just
it's
by
his
him.
Throat, it's his voice, yeah. It's his breathing. It's his, yeah. Wow.
And mostly
diaphragm.
Happening all at the same time.
Wow.
And it also connects to a feeling that runs through Obeda and many other Syrians, which is not being able to breathe. And when the revolution came, they call it themselves a moment where suddenly they were allowed to breathe.
Yes.
And it also comes with feeling repression culturally, not being allowed the kind of freedoms you want as a woman, and having to fight like crazy to carve your way in life. And so Obeda really has this thing about teaching Syrians to breathe because they don't know how to breathe.
Right. Right.
And that connects to Colin Stetson. And then when we heard his music, when it came, it was just a wow experience. It completely matches the emotions that we wanted.
I love how she says she wanted to, in the sound booth, wanted to broadcast forbidden songs.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like communicating on another frequency. Another thing related to other frequencies is that this breathing and streaming of pain is very much connected to the prison system in Colombia. In the sense that every family, more or less, have members in prison. Obeda has many friends and family who are either in prison, have been in prison, or disappeared in prison. And what happens when you're put in prison in Syria is that oftentimes you disappear. Nobody can figure out where you are,
right.
What has happened to you. Sometimes you never reappear or nobody will ever figure it out. So she talks about that there is a frequency that she experiences where she communicates on a mental level with friends and family in prison, imagining their pain as a sort of stream. And I've spoken to people who've been in prison who experienced the same thing, where they, not knowing their fate or anything, not being able to communicate with the outside, still feel a very strong presence of friends and family.
How do you think that translates to me, the audience, to me, the listener, to me, the guy who consumes news in the Western world or in the majority world? Sorry, not the majority world, the minority world, our side of the world, the developed side of the world, where there's so much noise. How do you? I mean, as filmmakers, you want people to see this film clearly. You want to get this message out. I mean, one of the themes of the festival this year. And by the way, congratulations on the film. It's utterly brilliant. One of the rebels, I think, that you interview, that you catch on screen, says, "Quote: silence in the face of injustice is complicity with the devil." And I mean, we hear about Syria all the time. You know, it's easy to find the stats. Is it 4.5 million people displaced, and how many people killed, and people? It's insane. And yet, there seems to be this ongoing silence of a sort. How do you get through?
Well, I think the silence more relates to that. In the flow of news, there's a reproduction of just events that are happening, but there's very little analysis and depth and very little human depth. So it actually makes us as people witnessing from afar, it makes us connect less. So the idea that the more you see, the more you connect, it actually oftentimes has the opposite effect. I think documentary can bridge that. The reason I talk about prison is because I think that that's one of the major issues today that really has to be looked at and dealt with regarding Syria, because it's hard to come with a clear answer about what should happen with peace negotiations.
I mean, that's
the
question I want to ask you, right? What do you learn about negotiating?
But there's a huge task in putting pressure on the Assad's regime to release the hundreds of thousands that are in prison, to account for their fates. There are family Syrians everywhere, and I've met many, who are in desperate situations because they don't know what happened to their loved ones.
500,000 still in prison, I think, according to the UN. Is that right?
Yeah, it's something.
Obviously, at some point, it just almost becomes meaningless, right?
And documented, it's 60,000 that have been killed under torture. 60,000, but that's just the number that's documented. It's probably much more. And we also have to understand that the Assad regime has been very deliberate in attacking moderates in society. And what the people that have been in prison is to a great extent moderates, because they wanted and have always sought to carve a situation where they are the better choice against radical extremists. And by taking out the moderates, they have basically created that situation very actively. And that means that you have a whole generation that's in prison in Syria or who have fled. And they should have been the ones who could build the future of Syria, but they're gone.
Andres, is this kind of change? I mean, you know, so there's, you know, you think of revolutions, and revolutions typically are, you know, bubbling below the surface for a long time, and then boom, they hit. And I, you know, as a development guy, I'm all about incremental change. You know, little things making a big difference, the domino effect, etc. I mean, how do you affect, you know, having seen this and lived it, you know, in this film, for how long was the project all in?
Well, I've been involved for less than 2 years, but the whole process of the film goes back to 2011.
Yeah, so it's a long time to be living and breathing this and you know, from the inside and the out. And a beautiful way that you humanized, I think, this issue, you know, I think for so many. Is there a better way to deal with it? I mean, it just seems so, you know, it's, what a ridiculous thing to say. It seems so rebellious. You know, pick up your, you know, and you go in and you dive in head first. Might have there been a softer sell? Is that just a crazy question?
Yeah, I don't think it's a crazy question, but I doubt that reality could have ever occurred, given the way that the Assad regime acted.
The brutality of the regime.
When the brutality of the regime was a deliberate strategy to push the revolution into a more violent direction, because the regime was never interested in a peaceful opposition movement. That's the most dangerous thing for their goal, which is to keep power. And if you talk with Obeda about this revolution, and she says it very early on in the film, in the radio, she talks about, if we try to change our situation, will life get better or will it get worse? So it was a question that was very much out in the open among many people at the time. And she describes it herself as it was a moment of throwing up period, that there was so much pus in society that had been building up that it had needed a release, and that this release was more than anything about release and rebellion than it was really about clear political goals. But so much pressure had been put on society that it just had to happen.
I don't know if it was her that said this or someone else that was being interviewed, but the quote was, or at least the notion was, that the Syrian people had pretended to be happy for too long. Mm-hmm. They had just, you know, so there was almost a silence within their own culture that put up with this, you know, political nonsense for so many years, and then boom, it was like it popped.
Very much, but the Assad regime in Syria was considered for many years to be one of the most closed countries in the world.
40 years in power,
so it's 40 years. Yeah. So we have to keep that in mind, that it's a special situation. And also there is a scene in the movie where a man talks about how he was in prison and he was put in front of a judge. And the judge then asks him, why are you chanting for freedom?
It's a great
What
moment.
Is freedom? Define it for me. And then he explains how he answered the judge, I can't. Don't ask me to define freedom. I can't because I never experienced it, and neither can any Syrian.
But we know it's not this. Yeah. We know it's not what we're currently living. We can feel that from the inside out.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I think it's... it's a really telling moment where we don't know what we want, but we got to. It's got to be better than what we currently have. The young girl, the beautiful face at the beginning of the film. I want my freedom. I want to play. And I mean, the things that we take for granted. I mean, I do a fair bit of work overseas, a lot of work in Cambodia, actually. And so I've been very aware of a difficult situation for so many years, mental health, PTSD, landmines, civil war, the genocide, and so on. The list goes on. No idea. We have no idea. And it's film like this, it seems to me, that I don't know, the gadfly, is that, you know? The irritant in culture that says, help us, you know, come alongside, make a difference.
And the difficult thing today, I think, seeing the Assad regime becoming rather stable with the support of Russia.
Right.
There is more and more openness globally to reach a peace agreement that might even keep the Assad regime in power. From a pragmatic point of view, it could be an easy choice to say, sure, we'll go with that situation. But we also have to consider that this whole crisis, which is now also a global crisis, it's very closely connected to the brutality of the Assad regime and their way of dealing with their own country is just beyond cynical and vicious. And keeping them in power is also just pushing a problem forward that's going to repeat itself 10, 20 years from now. Because their policies, their way of imprisoning people, torturing any kind of political opponents is not a new thing. It's been going on for 40 years. The crisis we have today, much more than it's about Syrian culture or just a natural result of a complex ethnic mix, which of course it is too. It's foremost a result of the viciousness of the Assad regime.
The camera, the film work in this film becomes sort of a character in a sense because you've got the Assad regime's cameras, you've got your cameras and your sort of intrusion into what's going on. And every now and then, you know, the camera goes down, you're running. It's interesting stylistically because I think at some point, I think she says that the regime fought art with violence, I think was the phrase. And so is it fair to assume that for the many, many years, you know, the hand would have gone in front of the camera, but in a much more violent way than just, hey, can you turn the camera off there, buddy?
Well, there's a friend in the movie called Rabea, who is a heavy metal drummer.
Yes.
And it says in the film how that movement was cracked down much earlier. Mm. So a lot of these different kinds of movements for that are not even political were cracked down. And Obeda herself is talking oftentimes about how the ability to in any way define yourself outside of the norm was under heavy pressure. The ability to be an individual, to define yourself was extremely tough. So it was extremely tough to do that. So we see it in many dictatorships.
Yeah, absolutely.
At different levels.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated by the group, your group, this group that did actually, you know, find themselves in a sense that fought back. That
related to the camera, something that we played very consciously with it in the making of the film and the style. Is that cameras used to be something that you would just use at weddings.
Right.
And suddenly it became a tool of self-expression and a tool of discovery. But it was something that everybody kind of had to learn from scratch because there was no experience to build on. But with the revolution in 2011, people going out on the street, it was a moment of extreme self-discovery on so many levels. And the camera was a part of that too. Finding a language of how to use a camera. What can we do when we're together? And I test my camera on you. So we implemented that in the making of this film, where you really see them picking up the camera, starting to explore with one another the language of the revolution, the language of their own self-discovery. And then it just grows from there also, where you start seeing the camera play a very active role in the revolution going into the war, where the camera constantly is not only portraying reality, but definitely part of shaping reality all the time. And the way that people also act in front of the camera is playing roles to serve oftentimes political agendas.
I got to say, many moments that stand out for me in the film, but one in particular near the end with the young boy with the gun, or the sign.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know which side he's sort of cheering for.
He's cheering
There's
for
this comical moment. I don't
Islamic state while having a sign that says civil state.
Yeah.
And he says,
I was confused.
I was confused. I just want to be on camera.
Yeah.
And
it's great.
It's
really interesting.
I think it also relates to that this self-expression was
for sure.
Such a strong need. That in many cases, and it's said at one moment by Obeda's voiceover, that the goal was not political, it was about disobedience. It was basically expressing obedience, something that you'd never been allowed.
What do you say to people, and I've heard it quite a bit in the last, I'd say, year and a half, and I'd love to talk to you a little bit about this supposed ceasefire. That's currently been imposed in the last 24 hours. That's going to go on for 10 days, etc. I've heard many people say at different levels, academically and just sort of over tea and coffee, isn't the current regime better than what would take its place? And so it's kind of like that's what we've been told. So therefore, politically or ideologically, that's what we're going to have to support, as bad as they are. It's kind of that whole lesser of two evils kind of thing.
We discuss it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Also related to the film, can we use this film as a way to put light on certain issues, and what is the right way forward? And a Syrian friend told me yesterday, and I think he's kind of right. Number one, we have to think less about killing. So any kind of thing that can create less suffering is in itself positive. Second, stop barrel bombing. Stop the regime's barrel bombing. It's a crazy kind of suffering that you see in areas that are under siege and are being barrel bombed. Then, once we get to that point, things will start opening up in various ways. But with the very locked situation that there's there right now, I think more than anything, it's really reduced the killing.
Reduce the killing.
Number one.
Can you quickly unpack barrel bombing?
Barrel bombing is a particularly brutal way of bombing because it's very imprecise, and it's basically barrels full of explosives that are dropped over areas where people live, and there was a minister in the Assad government who was praising barrel bombs the other day because it cost like 1% of what missiles cost. So it's a very effective way of creating suffering, basically.
And keeping costs down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I think you guys really humanize the conflict in a way that I haven't seen. Silvered Water was another film I saw a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that humanized the war in a different way for me than yours did. The camaraderie of these friends,
mm-hmm.
The community that was clearly already there, the musician and the partying and kind of that blatant disregard for the regime,
mm-hmm.
really comes through in a fun, playful way that I hope and I trust audiences are going to really resonate with. Was that just sort of the ethos of it, the culture of it, or did you guys intentionally say, we really want to make this a human film? Oh, and her voice as a narrator.
Yeah, she's got a great voice.
It's utterly brilliant.
It was a very conscious choice for everyone. Number one, because Obeda was never a one-woman army. She's was part of a group of friends, and each of their fates in different ways really show what has gone on in Syria. So we had to tell their stories. And for Obeida herself, it was also a great part of what kept her going making this film, which has been a painful process, which was the desire to tell their stories, and especially, of course, the ones that are no longer alive. So this was an important part. For me, looking at it, more as a story, I was fascinated about this meeting between, on the one level, a war movie and then this road trip of a kind of beat generation of young people who are into, not that, it was a journalist who asked me the other day in Venice that, or he told me they look very, seem very Western. And I was just like, well, what does that mean? That they're into cool stuff? That they like music and they're exploring and they're curious? And it was just fantastic to see a group of people that were defined by things that I can relate to myself, that remind me of the friends that I have in life. And I think many people watching the movie feel the same. So so this was a very important thing to bring out. Because suddenly we're not defining each other by labels or defining each other from any political position or religious position, but just as human beings.
As human beings. I love the line, and sadly we have to wrap it up, but Hassan the hero, near the end of the film, and I believe the narrated line is, sometimes a camera can inspire a hero. I thought it was, you know, just to your comment earlier about, you know, that self-expression and that wanting stand up, and then the young boy wanting to say something. Yeah, he was confused, but he still had to get it out. And you guys have done that. So thank you for a brilliant film, a great and an important film, The War Show. I'm here with Andreas Dasgud.
Yep.
And Obeida Zeitoun, co-directed by the two of them. It's here at the Toronto International Film Festival. And is there going to be another way to see it once the festival is over? Will it be available online? Or is
it will definitely be available online, but we are trying to plan the
of course
strategy of going first cinema release in North America, then it'll get out on TV, VOD. It's going to be on Canadian TV too.
It's great. Well, thank you for your time and your generosity and your honesty and